And welcome to Bariaftercare, the podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Connie Stapleton. This is episode 172, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, part two. Welcome to part two of this book review. The book being Why People Don't Heal and How They Can by Carolyn Meiss, M-Y-S-S. In the last episode, we got deep into the ways people consciously or subconsciously interfere with their own healing. In this episode, we'll be focusing more on ways those who choose to heal can do so. I really love this book, and although it's not specifically written for a bariatric audience, it applies perfectly, and it applies to anyone struggling with any disease. So please share this podcast and recommend the book. Let's get started. Hello, I'm excited about this episode of the podcast again. We're picking up where we left off last week, reviewing the book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. Tonight, we're focusing on how they can. This book was written by an amazing woman. I find her to be amazing anyway, named Carolyn Meiss, M-Y-S-S. And I would really encourage you to read all of her books. They're amazing. So tonight, we're going to talk about a recap of last week, about 2 minutes worth. Then we're going to talk about five myths that Carolyn Meiss points out regarding healing. And also, most specifically, with great detail, wonderful questions that you can ask yourself, some of the things that you can do if you make the decision, and yes, it is a choice, that you want to heal. So let's get on with it. We talked last week about reasons people might not want to heal, which, although it seems very counterintuitive, it's like, why would you not want to heal from the disease of obesity or any other disease? Well, there are actually some reasons. We've talked about some of them in prior podcast episodes, but some of it surrounds, this is how I get my needs met. If I'm ill, then I have people caring for me. If I'm ill, then I have people having compassion for me. If I can't do things for myself, then I have other people around who will help me. And maybe I have a fear that if I don't have this illness, they won't be as kind or as compassionate or as available or around me, and I'll be alone, which is a terrifying thing. Another thing to consider when it comes to healing from any kind of an illness or disease is really realizing that it's going to require change. And we talked last episode about the fact that making changes is terrifying to people, and it requires us to really look deeply at how willing we are, to what lengths we're willing to go to make these changes in our life to get what we say we want or to heal from a disease. Obesity is a chronic disease. And how far are we go? How far are we willing to go? What changes are we willing to make when it comes to healing from this disease? And healing from the disease of obesity requires having a healthy lifestyle. So what changes are you willing to make to have that healthy lifestyle? So I would go back and listen to last week's episode again. And some questions to ask yourself surrounded exactly that. Am I willing to give up certain foods? Am I willing to incorporate exercise and other behaviors in order to maintain a healthy weight for my life? So tonight, let's get on with part two from this amazing book, Why People Don't Heal and How They Can. All right. We'll begin by talking about the five myths that Carolyn Meiss talks about regarding healing. Before we talk specifically about the five, here's what she says. My many experiences in working with people who are confronting illness have caused me to believe that people often do not heal because, like we said last week, either consciously or unconsciously, they have more faith in deeply potent belief patterns that interfere with healing than they do with their ability to heal. In other words, they believe that they'll be alone or that nobody will care or nobody will be kind or compassionate. So they hold on to those beliefs and they believe those more fully than they believe in their ability to heal. Five central myths about healing that can fully take charge of your mental and emotional strength. And these myths, if you buy into these myths, they can really debilitate your healing process. So let's talk about these myths and ask yourself the question, do I buy into this belief, which is untrue, more than I buy into the belief that I can heal? And each of these myths, she says, surrounds that idea of woundology, which she described and we talked about last episode. And woundology means, oh my gosh, I'm so wounded. I've been hurt. I've been abused. I've been neglected. I've been abandoned. I have all this woundedness. Woe is me. And I'd rather stay focused on that than heal. Anybody who stays stuck in their woundedness weakens their body, lending it to be more susceptible to illnesses and diseases, and makes it far more difficult to heal. So got to be careful about buying into these myths. And she says the deal with healing is that it's intangible. Sometimes it's hard to see. Sometimes it's hard to feel. Sometimes it's hard to put your finger on. But you can see and feel your illness. You know when you hurt. You know when you have pain. You know when you are struggling. And it's harder to see the intangible parts of healing sometimes. The most effective way to break the force of these myths, she says, is to recognize that you believe it. Recognize, you know what? I buy into this myth. It's not a good thing. And even though other people buy into this too, and we share that belief, the belief doesn't mean it's a fact. I believe this myth, but maybe it's not true. I believe this to be true, but maybe that's not a fact. My beliefs aren't necessarily factual. Then we have to detach ourselves from the influence that this belief has over us and our ability to heal. Oh, I love that. So as we talk about each of these myths, ask yourself, first of all, is this something that I believe? And if it is something you believe, recognize that this is not going to leave you without a fight, because we dearly cling to the things that we believe. In fact, there's so much amazing research on people holding on to a belief that even when they're presented with factual information, scientific information, contrary to it, they're going to hold on to it anyway. Say, I don't believe that, because we want to believe we're right. We want to be right. Oh, here we go. It's time for the cough drop. I have that tickle in my throat. Oh, and there's a dog hair on my cough drop. Gotta love it when that happens. Okay. So if you want to heal, you got to be willing to fight these myths that you're going to want to hold on to. All right. The first myth, she says, is my life is defined by my wound. She writes, it's virtually impossible not to be influenced by a personal history of emotional or psychological wounds. Truth, right? If you're beaten as a child, it's impossible not to be influenced by that. If you're told you're worthless, impossible not to be influenced by that. If you have experienced sexual abuse as a child, it's impossible not to have been affected by that. If you're told your weight is a problem and you're teased and made fun of all of your life from childhood, it's impossible not to be affected by that. However, she says, many people come to believe that their lives are only a compilation of their wounds, and they feel like there's little they can do to heal. So if you have succumbed to the idea that, oh my God, you know, I am so wounded, I've suffered so much in my life, there's just no hope for me. This disease has affected me so badly, there's no way I can heal from it. She writes, people sometimes say things like, you don't understand. I've never been the same since that experience. How can I change that now? After experiencing a traumatic or tragic experience, these people tend to look at every new experience through the lens of the wound it inflicted on them. They project the past experience onto everything that has since come into their life. Okay, I teach this also in Gain While You Lose. People have a filter. We all have a filter. And if we've been teased or made fun of about our weight, for example, all of our life, then there's almost no way not to interpret other people's looks, comments, behavior toward us as not having something to do with our weight. Makes perfect sense. How could it be otherwise? It makes a lot of sense, but we have to understand that whatever our experiences have been, maybe it's, you know, your mom got married 5 times and every one of the people cheated on her and you were cheated on all through high school and all through college. And now you're like, I just don't believe that people don't cheat. Everybody cheats. So that's your lens, right? Everything comes through the filter of what you've experienced in your world. Or maybe your dad died when you were a child and then, you know, your high school boyfriend left you and then your husband ran off. So you're left believing, I can never trust any man. Because your filter and your lens is, all the men in my life have left me. And so, of course, every man is always going to leave me. So this state of mind is, she says, sad, self-limiting, and defeatist. Some people derive great power in maintaining it because it gives them permission to lead a life of minimal expectations and limited responsibility. Aha! There's one of the reasons people don't maybe want to heal. Because if I believe that my weight has hindered everything and I'm not going to get a job promotion because of my weight, nobody's going to love me because of my weight, nobody's going to, you know, like me or go out of their way for me, and everybody's going to treat me poorly and they're all going to look at me and they're going to make assumptions that are negative about me. This is not a healthy way to live, but maybe there's a benefit to it. Nobody expects anything from me. So if I don't change, then I don't have to have any expectations. Now, she says, as the years go by, as the people who hold on to this become accustomed to this kind of power, and it is a sort of power, and self-protection, weight can be a self-protection, as can any illness, they find it more and more difficult to change. She says, the older we get, the harder it is to step out of our wounds and into a different view of life. So this reminds me so much of some of the other quotes that I read in Gain While You Lose, which is a class that I teach online about other people who work in the healing profession, psychiatrists, psychologists, who talk about people become more and more and more entrenched in these negative thoughts, and they believe them more and more and more. And the longer we hide in these and the harder we hold on to these, the harder it is for us to change. So Carolyn Meese goes on to say, the fact is that emphasizing the wounds, oh my gosh, everybody treats me poorly, everybody's going to look at me poorly, everybody's going to leave. Focusing on these wounds can damage your psyche as much as the original wound. But now you're doing it to yourself. You're self-inflicting it, right? And she goes on to say, dwelling on a wound is in fact a type of self-inflicted wound, a self-flagellation in which your consciousness is always focused on weakness and never on recovery. And I'm going to ask you to ask yourself, how much time do you spend thinking about how much other people think about your weight? How much time do you spend thinking about your weight and all the negative aspects related to it and how hard it makes your life? Are you focused on your woundedness? And in that online class that I teach, I point out that we often, as adults, continue to neglect ourselves. We continue to abandon ourselves. We abuse ourselves as adults, just like we may have been neglected, abandoned, or abused as children. What do I mean by that? We neglect ourselves by not going to the doctor when we're sick, by not getting annual physicals, by not getting dental checkups. Maybe it's because we're embarrassed about the weight, whatever it is. You're doing that to yourself now. It's not because of how you were wounded in the past, but you may think, oh, I've been wounded, but now you're wounding yourself. Maybe you're abusing yourself by the kinds of food you put into your mouth. Maybe you're abusing yourself by not moving your body. That's a way that we continue to buy into this disease and our woundedness by not taking responsibility to do the things necessary to overcome it. So, Carolyn Mee says, and I agree with this, I don't underestimate the difficulty of letting go of the belief that your life is and always will be defined by your wounds. It's hard to do. You cannot not be affected by childhood wounds, but you can't overcome it. And here she says, this myth is particularly difficult to give up because it's so serviceable. What does she mean by that? Well, it serves a purpose. What purpose? Here she answers that. It allows us to feel that any failure or absence of accomplishment on our part is someone else's fault. Well, my mom told me I'd never amount to anything, so it's her fault. Or they told me if I never lose weight, nobody would ever love me. Well, it's their fault. They predicted this. Well, my friends, you can work out of that. You have a choice now. Other ways that Carolyn Mee says that the myth that my life is defined by my wounds helps you is, she says, the only way to release the grip this myth has on your psyche, on your mind, is to take more responsibility for the quality of your life. That is the topic of an upcoming podcast, taking more responsibility. She says, instead of saying you wish you'd gone to college, go to college. Start by taking one course at a time, by correspondence if you need to, but start. She says, instead of wishing you weighed 50 pounds less than you do, start walking and change your diet. Even if you just walk a mile a day and eliminate only a few high-fat foods. So stay stuck in the wound or take responsibility to change it. Oh, that is so singing my song. Here are some important questions, she says, to ask yourself in relation to this first myth, my life is defined by my wound. Ask yourself, do you make excuses for why you're not doing more positive things with your life? Let me just tell you, in my work, I hear people make excuses every day, the number one being, I don't have time. Most people can make time by cutting out television for an hour, by not scrolling on your phone for half an hour, by not sitting and gossiping in the break room over lunchtime, but maybe going for a walk. Yeah, a lot of people make excuses for why they're not doing more positive things in your life. Do you compare your history of wounds with others? If so, why? Well, my mom said this. Well, my mom said that and this. Well, I was teased in this way. Well, I was teased in that way and in this way. Like, am I sicker than you and that's a prize? Another question she says to ask yourself, if you feel more wounded than somebody else, does that make you feel more empowered? Like, ooh, now I have more of a reason not to be responsible. Or if I'm sicker than you are, then, you know, you can't expect very much of me. not really fun things to ask ourselves, but really critical things if you want to get on with the business of healing. Because a lot of us do these things, but we don't recognize these things as being in the way of our healing, but they certainly are. All right. She also says that if you're a person who is afraid of being strong and independent, like if I have to take responsibility for my life and maybe say no to somebody or maybe confront something difficult or maybe ask for a raise or maybe set a boundary with somebody. So if you're afraid of those kinds of things in life, you're going to find it very difficult to retain or recover your health, meaning it's easier for me to stay stuck. It's easier for me to stay overweight in this case because I'm too afraid to get out there and live life as a healthy adult who does hard adult things. All right, here's the second myth that if you buy into, you're going to have a hard time developing or healing, developing a healthy lifestyle or healing from your disease of obesity or doing the work it takes to maintain that weight loss. Being healthy means being alone. Carolyn Meese writes, a phrase commonly used to refer to a return to health is to stand on one's own two feet again. That is to take care of oneself, to be independent. Oops, we were just talking about that. She goes on to say that for some psychologically wounded people, becoming healthy and becoming independent would amount to isolation and vulnerability. And who wants that? She says this fear of being heroic or this fear of being independent or this fear of people thinking you got it all together translates to a fear of being alone. And I don't want to be alone. And I fear being alone. People thinking I got it all together and never need any help. So that may lie at the core of their inability to heal. They think people are going to expect, if you act like you got it all together, if you're independent and you're really healthy, then maybe nobody will want to be around me. Nobody will, you know, people will quit asking me, is there anything I can do for you? Or let me bring you some, you know, items that you need, or let me, you know, get you out and, you know, get you out of the house. So maybe it means being alone. She goes on to say, moreover, sometimes people believe once they're healed, they'll always be healed. And so with the onset of health, the need for emotional and psychological support will somehow evaporate altogether. That's not necessarily true, but if you felt abandoned as a child, or if you felt completely alone until your health deteriorated or your weight increased to the point that you needed physical health, maybe you're afraid that you won't have anybody around you. And that's a huge fear for some people. So we have to have compassion for that and encourage people to find support in healthier ways, even if they're going to be healthier. So here are some questions she says to ask you in relation to this second myth. Is being healthy going to mean that I'm alone? So here are some questions. Are you afraid that if you heal, your support group will abandon you or be less sympathetic to you? Important question. When you picture yourself as being healed, do you picture yourself as being the only one in the room? Another question. Do you see emotional wounds as a means of bonding with another person? And does healing mean having to separate from that person? So if you remember in the last episode, we talked about sometimes people develop romantic relationships around their wounds. Like nobody understands me the way you do because you and I have both experienced this business of suffering from obesity or suffering from this alcoholism or suffering from this, whatever it is. You get me. And so we develop a bond, a friendship or a romance. And then if one person decides to heal and get past their wounds and learn the tips to maintain a healthy lifestyle and develop a healthy social life and develop a life independent of the other person, does that mean that I'm going to lose that relationship? And if so, then maybe I choose not to heal. Good question to ask yourself. All right. The third myth, feeling pain means being destroyed by pain. Okay. So we can talk physical pain and emotional pain. She's talking more about physical pain. So we'll go with what she's talking about first. So the myth of if you're going to heal from a disease, that if you're feeling pain, it means you're going to be destroyed by pain. So she talks about drug addiction. So she refers to our drug-filled society, maintains that most physically and psychologically painful conditions should be medicated away. Although the use of pain-relieving drugs may be essential at some stage in any healing process, we need to ask if those drugs are always necessary or if they become a distraction from what the pain is telling us about our lives. Being in pain, physical or emotional pain, is a horrific experience, but so is drug dependence. Drugs can make things worse. Because when you take them, maybe you develop a drug addiction. So now you've got your physical pain from your disease, or you've got your emotional pain related to your disease, and you take the drugs maybe to numb the physical pain or drugs to numb the emotional pain. And now we've got a new set of problems, a new set of pain. It's the addiction. And I have some really great quotes, and I think this one is by a guy named Gabor Mate. He says, the attempt to escape the pain causes more pain. So maybe you have the disease of obesity, or maybe you have childhood trauma and you eat to ease that pain. And as you eat to ease that pain, you gain more weight. And as you gain more weight, you gain more diseases. And now we have the pain of those diseases, maybe physically and emotionally. And your attempt to escape your original pain has caused more pain. Or you have physical pain related to a broken arm or a broken leg or fibromyalgia or whatever it is, and you take these pain medications and you become addicted to the pain medication, and now you've got a whole new set of pain related to the drug addiction. Or you're an emotional eater and you learn that food takes away your emotional pain. But again, the more food you eat to get rid of the emotional pain, the more weight you gain, the more weight you gain, the more pain you have. And it becomes a vicious cycle. You've got pain on top of pain. So in order to deal with this third myth that you're going to be destroyed by pain, either physical or emotional, and so you have to take these pain medications or continue to eat the food because God knows you can't deal with this pain. She says, here's some questions to ask yourself. Do you think of pain as always being an enemy? Remember, she talked about sometimes we have illnesses that are to bring to our attention the fact that maybe we need to look at life a little differently, or maybe we need to make some changes in order to have more sympathy for other people or more compassion, or maybe we need to make changes in our lives to experience a healthier version of life physically and mentally. So maybe sometimes an illness is an opportunity. Maybe your obesity is an opportunity. By working toward a healthy lifestyle, you can learn a lot of life lessons. But her question is, do you think of pain as always being an enemy? I think initially we do, but sometimes afterwards we're like, wow, I learned a lot from that. Oh, which is her next question. Have you ever learned anything from physical pain? If so, what? And I'm going to change that and say, have you ever learned anything from emotional pain? Because we can learn a lot from either physical or emotional pain. She says, to cope with pain, are you more inclined to take chemical medication or to use meditation or some other inner discipline? Meaning, do I just want to numb the pain with medication, or do I want to learn and grow? Can I use healthy tools and skills, which we're going to talk about in just a minute, like meditation or a mentor or therapy or the healthy parts of support groups? Have you ever been addicted to pain medication or sleeping pills or any kind of pills or food? Good questions, because maybe you're afraid that emotional or physical pain is going to kill you. When you have options to treat that in healthier ways, perhaps, than pain medication. Sometimes it's necessary. I'm not saying it's not, neither is she. Or antidepressants or any other psychotropic medication. Sometimes they're necessary. In addition to that, are you doing the other things that can lead to greater insight, wisdom, and a healthier overall lifestyle? All right, here's another myth. All illness is the result of negativity, and we are damaged at our core. So do you believe that your illness is the result of negativity, the bad things that happen, the woundedness, the negative, you know, just the bad things in life? And you know what? I'm so damaged, there's no hope. Here's what we're going to talk about, this thinking thing, right? I always talk about the importance of changing your thinking. So Carolyn Meese says, our thoughts powerfully influence the health of our minds and bodies, without a doubt. And delving into our inner selves is essential to the healing process. We have to look deeper than the illness, the disease. Yet negative patterns are not always at the root of illness. And a failure to heal should not always be blamed on our woundedness, right? Or, you know, deeply buried psychological issues, like the disease of obesity. For some people, it's a complex web of physiological issues. There's no deep-seated wound. There's no trauma. There's no, you know, they've got PCOS. They've got, you know, their hormones are all whacked up, you know, whatever it is. There's some biological mechanism, and that's what their obesity is about. For others, it's about that plus maybe some woundedness, but it's not, illness is not always about having been wounded. It's not always about negative patterns. She says your negative patterns are not always the root of illness. So, and a failure to heal should not always be blamed on negative experiences or negative beliefs, right? We just said that. So sometimes it's the result of a complex combination of causes. And trying to just focus on a single thing isn't going to get you answers. So we need a multidisciplinary team, right? We need the physical people to help, the physicians. We need the psychologists. We need the coaches. We need the mentors. We need the support groups. It's a whole bunch of things that most people need. But she says, healing from any kind of illness, obesity is an illness, would be better served if we investigated our past, not just for the negative issues, but for the positive ones as well. And I love this. And I need to do more of this with people. Even as we seek out all that can contribute to our weaknesses, we need to bring into focus your strengths, your enduring parts of your personalities. We all have strengths. We all have different levels of internal strengths. So if we're just looking at the woundedness, sometimes we forget to look at our positive strengths. And a lot of times we talk about, you have, so many people have wonderful discipline in different areas of their life, just not when it comes to what they eat. Or they have wonderful, you know, wonderfully good habits and a healthy lifestyle as far as their job goes, or as far as their parenting or their partnership. It's just related to this. Those are called transferable skills. And we do talk about those in bariatric care. What do you do well in these other areas of life? Bring it into this area. You've got the skill. So we really need to look at the positives as a way of healing as well. So she says, if you buy into this fourth myth that all illness is about negativity and you're damaged at the core, in other words, there's no use trying, she says, ask yourself these questions. Are you always searching for what you did to deserve your illness? What did I do wrong? What have I done to deserve this? That's not focusing on positives. Do you believe that until you uncover what you did wrong, you won't be able to heal? Not a healthy mindset. Do you find yourself dwelling on negative experiences from the past, believing that doing this actually enhances your healing. Like, I'm only going to focus on these negative things and I've got to figure it all out. And when I figure it all out, I'll heal. No, you won't. You're staying stuck. And we don't want to be staying stuck. We want to identify and work through the woundedness and get on with the learning and the skills and the tips and the tools. We don't want to stay stuck. All right. Do you buy into this fifth myth? True change is impossible. A lot of people will say things like, people can't change. People never change. They don't really change. Do you buy into that? She says the final myth is especially debilitating because it has a great deal of clout in your mind. If you believe this, boy, it's firmly rooted, regardless of whether one is physically ill. She goes on to say, the reason we believe change is impossible is simple. Nobody likes change. Nobody wants to change. We like things to remain familiar. Perversely enough, even in a difficult situation. So it's easy to think about like a person who stays in an abusive relationship. Well, why don't they just leave? Well, it's easier to deal with the devil we know. And she says that we believe that the devil we know is the better than the one we don't. And that's how most of us look at the process of change or healing. Even though change is constant and inevitable, we prefer to turn our attention and a great deal of our attention to preventing changes from happening. Well, for goodness sake, nothing changes if nothing changes. So if you don't change your lifestyle, your weight's not going to change. If you don't change your lifestyle, you're going to regain the weight you lost after having weight loss surgery. If you don't implement the changes you learn in therapy, you're going to have the same unhealthy relationship you had before. Good Lord. She says healing and change are one and the same thing. So if you're going to heal, you have to change. If you don't want to change, you're not likely to heal. If you want to maintain your weight loss, you have to be willing. Gonna repeat this. You have to be willing to make changes. And if you're not willing to make changes, you're not likely going to maintain a healthy weight loss. She says healing and change are composed of the same energy. We can't seek to heal an illness without looking into what behavioral patterns and attitudes need to be altered in our life. Hello, weight loss people, right? When you want to change your weight, you want to maintain a healthy weight, you have to make some behavioral changes called the gotta do them's, right? Eat the food at the right times, eat the protein first, drink the water, take the bariatric specific vitamins, all those behavioral gotta do them's. But also your attitudes need to change. Your attitude needs to be, I think I can do this. Your attitude needs to be, I'm going to do this even if nobody does it with me. Your attitude needs to be, even when the going gets tough, I'm going to get tougher. You've got to change your attitude and you got to change your behaviors. Not rocket science. You've heard this before. So once you identify the things you got to change, you have to do something. Surprise, surprise. It's not just the awareness. It requires taking action, she says, and I say. And action brings about change. Remember the four aces that I talk about? The E in aces is for effort. Effort. Nothing changes without effort. So if you want to maintain healthy weight, you've got to make changes that involve effort. She says, healing requires internal as well as external change. Oh, I love hearing this. It's so affirming to me. She says, it requires asking ourselves questions such as, and ask yourself these questions. Am I fulfilled by the life I am leading? Translated, if I'm not happy with the life I'm leading, what behavioral and psychological attitudinal changes do I need to make? Another question, she says, have I given enough attention to my own personal needs, or have I just sought to look after the needs of others? I hear it every day. I've taken care of others for 30 years. Now it's my turn. You have to take care of your own personal needs. She says, these questions not only direct our attention to ourselves, but also compel us to shift directions in our lives and even change our nature. We have to change if you want things different. Nothing changes if nothing changes. She says, when we realize this, it's usually at this point that we begin to argue with ourselves. We start arguing, right? Telling ourselves again and again that we simply cannot change our nature. This is the way I've always been, we say, because this is who I am. I'm just not a breakfast eater. I just don't like exercise. I just don't want to go to the gym. I just don't want to sweat. Well, I've never been. Well, you know me. Okay. Let's convince ourselves that we don't need to change or that this is just who I am. I've done this in the past and I'll tell you how. You know, little Miss Potty Mouth me. I've always said, well, it's just who I am. I just have a potty mouth. It's just who I am. And I was confronted about this. And it was a wonderful confrontation by a person who meant well and cared about me and wasn't being rude, but just said, is that really true? Or is that what you just tell yourself? It's just what I tell myself. Of course I can talk without potty mouth, but most of the time I choose not to. And that is a choice. And if there are repercussions and people don't like it, if I'm talking to a public group, then shame on me. You know, I have to say, well, either I don't care about that, but I do. And so then I have to change. I have to put more effort into not using a potty mouth, which I have done much more of. Not always, but much more of. But it's not just who I am. I wasn't born with a potty mouth. Yeah, I grew up with potty mouths all around me, but I have a choice. Just like you may have grown up in a household where people ate poorly and most people carried extra weight, but you have a choice. It's not just who you are. And even though genetics plays a large part in the disease of obesity, you can be your healthiest version of what your body's going to allow by making changes. So, questions for self-examination, says Carolyn Meese. Do you think about change more than you act to bring it about? Oh, I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start doing that. I do this sometimes with meditation. I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to take the time. And I don't always do it. So if I want that to become a part of my life and reap the benefits from that, I have to make the changes. I have to build it into my schedule. Another question for self-examination. Do you always imagine that change will be troublesome and depressing rather than adventuresome or exciting? Oh my God, that exercise. Oh God, it's just going to be such a drudgery. Well, maybe it'll be fun. Maybe you can go to a place that you find really interesting, like maybe the botanical gardens, and walk through the botanical gardens, and it's fascinating and beautiful. I don't know. Maybe you like the water, and so maybe you decide, oh, I hate going to the gym and the pool, but maybe you can go to the beach and walk in knee-deep water. So maybe it could be adventuresome. Do you think of change as something that will make your life feel out of control and chaotic? Like, oh, my schedule's going to be all messed up and how am I going to make time? Well, you're a smart person or you can get some help so that it doesn't have to be necessarily chaotic. In other words, are you making excuses? Okay. If you decide that you are making the choice to change, if you are deciding that if you want to keep this weight off, then you have to make these changes, scary as it may be. Here are some great things that you can do, according to Carolyn Meese, and we have talked about these. None of this is going to be like anything you haven't heard before, maybe in a different way. Okay, first of all, she says, remember that asking why painful things have happened or asking why wonderful things have happened in your life is a useless waste of energy. It is what it is, in other words. If you've got a disease, if you've struggled from obesity, if you've got the disease of addiction, if you've got the disease of whatever it happens to be, or if you've, you know, had the most wonderful education, or if you have the most wonderful people in your life, or if you have the most joyful children, don't ask why. What difference does it make? Why focus on that? Like, things are how they are. What are you going to do about the problem areas? She says identifying the wounds is only the first step of healing. The actual journey of healing requires moving through that pain. Hello. We talk about that all the time. We talk about it requires action. You can't just say awareness is the first step of change, but it's not going to result in change. Action is going to result in change. She says the greatest illusion, so this is an illusion of the new age, is that awareness alone heals. Awareness doesn't heal. Awareness by itself does nothing. Understanding something, when you know better, you do better. Not always. How long have you known better? How long have you known that eating highly processed foods is going to do nothing to lose weight? You've known it a long time. Have you done anything about it? Maybe, maybe not. So relying on the intellectual awareness, she says, relying on intellectual awareness alone to heal your body is wishful thinking. You don't need a wishbone. You need a backbone. Ooh, I love that. Telling it like it is. You need to do something about it. Taking action, she says, is so crucial to changing deep-seated negative beliefs. We're talking about your negative thoughts. And your behavior and getting on with healing. So you've got to take action. You can't just have weight loss surgery and expect to maintain weight loss unless it's just biological, which for most people it is not. You can't expect to have a surgery for rotator cuff and not have to follow through with physical therapy. Right? You have to take action. You need to do more than look for the easy way out. And I'm not saying weight loss surgery is the easy way out. It is certainly not. But if you think the surgery itself is going to do everything, then you are looking for the easy way out. When people go to a treatment program and they think when they leave, they're never going to struggle to desire alcohol or drugs, they're thinking they're looking for an easy way out. As they say in the recovery worlds, there is no easier, softer way. You have to put forth the effort. So weight loss surgery, not an easy way out if you want to maintain your weight loss. Easy way out if all you want to do is lose that weight and expect not to regain it. And not even easy, right? You know what I mean, right? I hope. I'm not saying anything negative about weight loss surgery. It's what I do. I live in that world. I think it's a great thing. All right. She says you have to get accustomed to viewing your own illness, your obesity, like you would viewing yourself going back to school. Translated, you need to learn new skills. Hello, Barry Aftercare. Hello, Barry Aftercare podcast. Hello, life coaches, bariatric coaches. We need to learn new things. Dietitians, exercise people. We need to learn new things. She says we have to detach ourselves from our minds a little bit because we get so focused on our illness and the troubles and the struggles. So become detached. We have to give our brain a rest from this. Quit thinking about it all the time. She says if you can detach yourself, even 5 minutes a day is so valuable. She says if you can have that mind rest, it can infuse your body with the equivalent energy of 6 months of living with hope. Detachment is not easy to achieve. She says how to think about detachment is a way of separating yourself from the fears that are in our mind, but looking at our circumstances and as an experience through which you're passing. So instead of thinking, oh my God, I'm so afraid of regain. I'm so afraid of regain. Maybe just looking at this as this is my journey through learning the life skills I need to learn to maintain this healthy weight loss. So give your mind a rest, do the meditation, detach from your disease, detach from your issues so that you can quit hyper-focusing. And she says, maybe having a mantra or a prayer or a chant for those times when you get all caught up in your head and you're just like, I'm so afraid of regain. I'm so afraid of regain. Your mantra could be, stay in the moment. In this moment, all is well. Just for today, I am healing. Just something to snap yourself back into, not focusing on what you're fearing, right? Because we know that we move in the direction of our most dominant thoughts. So when you get hung up on these negative thoughts, you've got to detach from them. And we can detach from them by focusing on something more positive. In this moment, all is well. I will make the next wise choice. In this moment, I choose health. Just having a mantra, I choose health. I choose health. I choose health. I make the next wise choice. Health, health, health can be your mantra, right? Having a mantra when you get caught up is a great way to detach from the fear. So she says we have to detach from the negativity. And one way to do that, so this is a great tip and a tool, is to have a mantra. We've talked about mantras before. Great, great way to do that. All right. She also says that when we heal, we need to forgive. This is a tough one, especially for people who are stuck in their woundedness. If we're stuck in, they did this to me and they did that to me, and therefore my life is miserable, henceforth, onward and forward forevermore. Amen. We have to begin to heal. And this is really, really tough. We have to forgive people in order to heal. Carolyn Mee says, one of the main beliefs that I want you to adopt in order to heal your life or your disease is a belief in the importance of forgiveness. Forgiveness frees up the energy necessary for healing. So when we're angry at somebody and we refuse to forgive them, or we choose not to forgive them, or we hold on to anger and bitterness, then it's taking all that energy to feed that anger and to fuel that resentment. And if we free ourselves from that, we have that energy to put forth into our healing process. She goes on to say, and this is so important, and you can get this message in many areas, in spiritual places and from mentors and from people who have been down the road, you know, who have held on to resentments and have refused to forgive. It hurts you. It harms you. Carolyn Mee says, forgiveness is one sure way out of debt. Forgiveness does not mean saying that what happened to you doesn't matter, or that it's all right for someone to have violated you. What it means is that you release the negative feelings you have about that event and the person or persons involved. And when you're able to do that, you free up so much energy that's focused on negativity and that woundedness, right? If you refuse to forgive, you're choosing to stay stuck in the woundedness. I believe that's true. She goes on to say, part of the problem with the victim mentality, poor me, you know, I'm a victim. I've been hurt. I'm forever damaged. Part of the problem with the victim mentality is that it overlooks the ways in which we ourselves perpetuate what was done to us. In other words, we're making this thing stay alive. If we would work to work through it, heal ourselves, forgive the people involved, we would be free of it. But the more we focus on it, we're keeping this negativity alive. She says, the next time you get caught up in angry thoughts about a past injury, try this exercise in forgiveness. Oh, this is good. So get ready. Look very closely at your own actions over the past week, and see if by chance you're committing the same kind of injustice or abuse from which you suffered. It doesn't have to be anything dramatic. She says, you may feel, for instance, that during your childhood, you were wrongly judged by another person, and that has influenced how people think of you today. If you're struggling, and this is me saying this now, if you're struggling with the disease of obesity and you were picked on or you were judged by society, that kind of sticks with you, right? And you tend to think through that lens, through that filter, that everybody's judging you. Now I'm back to what Carolyn Mee says. Even a simple act of being misunderstood by a parent or teacher at a crucial moment can continue to weigh on you. When you start feeling that weight, look at whether you have judged someone else in a similar fashion. At first, your judgment of another person may seem inconsequential. You don't like the way the person dressed, so you judge them as being a slob. Maybe you then convert that judgment into gossip. Did you see how so-and-so was, what they were wearing? Can you believe? Or you may comment on how a certain woman has achieved what she has in her career, implying that she lacks ethics or honesty. This is me saying this now. You know, she slept her way to the top, or, you know, I wonder what's going on there that she, you know, she's not that smart, whatever. Carolyn Mee says, in that way, a seemingly innocent or minor judgment can have serious consequences. You need both to forgive yourself for making the judgment and to forgive the person who judged you unfairly all those years ago. I love this. I love this because we are not free from unhealthy behavior and harming other people. Think about the way you talk to other people in your life. Think about the way we hurt other people on a daily basis with our words, our attitudes, our snarkiness. And yet we want them to forgive us. I'm not going to get all religious on you here, but, you know, forgive us our debts as we have forgiven others, all that sort of thing. Okay, onward and forward, but forgiveness is huge. And in the 12-step recovery, they talk about resentment, which is a lack of forgiveness, is one of the biggest reasons people relapse. So work on forgiveness toward others. Now, here's one you're going to say, gee, I've heard this before, but this is also in her book, Change Your Thinking. Duh, change that stinking thinking. Every belief pattern is worth examining. So what she suggests is that you keep a notebook with you at all times, specifically for recording thoughts and memories that are triggered as you go through this healing process. Keep in mind that negative beliefs usually result in negative behavior patterns. Negative thoughts lead to negative feelings, which lead to negative behaviors. I'm angry. I'm crabby. I want something to eat. I feel worse. Now I'm crabbier. Now I want something to eat. Negative behavior cycles, right? Work backward from the behavior patterns that trouble you until you figure out what the beliefs are that are underlying them. Okay, so I found myself eating such and such at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What was going on? Well, I just had that meeting with my boss and I was really ticked off. So I was angry. So I went to eat. So by learning that, you know, we talk about that when we talk about developing your personal protection plan. That's what I call it. It's called relapse prevention in the 12-step world, right? She says, Carolyn Mee says, if you find that a recurring illness results from or is made worse by a diet loaded with refined foods and sugar, you may be able to trace this negative behavior, eating that way, to the belief that you have nothing to do with the creation of your illness. So you may say, well, obesity is a disease and, you know, it just is what it is. And so it doesn't matter what I eat, but are you making your disease worse by choosing to eat crap food? Yeah, I think you might be. So those thought processes you might want to examine. If you're saying I have a disease and there's nothing I can do about it, that's not true. Yeah, you have a disease, but there are some things you can do about it. All right. Carolyn Mee also says, and these are the tips and the tools. So take note here. Become aware, become conscious as often as possible of what you're thinking about and where your energy is. Remember a minute ago, she talked about if you're angry at somebody, if you're not forgiving, if you're resentful, your anger, your energy is going to a negative place. That doesn't leave it in a place for healing. If you're all ticked off at your kids or your husband, that energy is going there. It could be going toward what can I do well for myself today? What kind of positive action can I take in the right direction? She says, when you feel yourself drifting back into the fog of a memory, whether it's a fight you had with your husband this morning or being teased and bullied in the third grade, command yourself. I love this. Command yourself. Command your energy to return to the present moment by saying, I'm not going in that direction anymore. I release it once and for all. You know, we've talked before in different episodes about saying, I refuse to give any more energy to this. I refuse to give any more thought to that. I refuse to think about my body this way. Get tough on yourself here a little bit. Command your energy to return to the present. What can I do right here, right now, to have a better attitude or to do something more positive? She says, keep tabs on all the times that you have a negative, she calls these tribal thoughts, or, you know, what people generally, you know, the negativity in the community. Like, you know, if people say, well, I don't know if that's going to do you any good, or, you know, change that thought immediately. Well, it could do me some good and I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to make the choices I need to make. So don't get caught up in, you know, the negativity coming about by other people. Make your own decisions and follow through. Remember, decide, she says, to say anything can be healed. My disease can be healed. This obesity can be treated, and I can achieve the most I can by doing the things I can do, by making healthy choices. Okay. Every time you feel yourself slipping into a negative thought, like, why did this happen? Or why me? Why do I struggle with this disease of obesity? Or listening to someone else's negative voice, you can return to your inner mantra that can reorient you immediately to a positive way of thinking. I will not give any more thought to that negativity. I refuse to go to a negative place. All right. She also says, this is a detachment kind of thing. Remember, don't say, she says, my experience of disease, my experience of obesity, my experience of illness becomes the experience of illness, rather than saying, I'm depressed, I'm experiencing depression, I'm anxious. Instead say, I'm experiencing anxiety. It detaches you from your disease. This is something I can treat. It's not who I am. I love that. All right. Then she talks about relationships and how to heal with your disease, from your disease, in terms of relationships. She says, different people bring out different sides of you. Some add fire to the hopeful side of your personality, while other people activate your fears. She says, examine your relationships with other people. The purpose of doing this is to help you evaluate how much energy are you investing in people who don't add value to your life, who don't encourage you. How much time are you investing in people who are trying to pull you back into an unhealthy lifestyle when it comes to the disease of obesity? How many people, you know, it's like the people, like in the support groups, stick with the winners. The people who are like, all right, after this meeting, we're going on a hike, versus the people who, after this meeting, we're going to the buffet. Stick with the winners. Where are you putting your energy into relationships? So, you have to gauge the amount of energy you're giving away in a negative way in your relationships. She says, list your relationships, list them out and figure out if they feel healthy, if they feel incomplete, if they're zapping your energy, or if they're adding to your life. So you got to decide. Again, and do this with your present and your past relationships. So, as a rule, you want to get rid of, to the extent possible, the relationships that are zapping your energy or trying to pull you out of your growth patterns. So maybe with your family, you don't want to completely cut off ties, but you want to learn to set the boundaries and not spend so much time with them. Friends who are trying to keep you away from healing in your new lifestyle of being more active and following through with the bariatric basic way of living. If people are trying to sabotage you, those are the people you might want to look at, you know, limiting your time with, or getting out of those relationships altogether in the 12 steps rooms, they say you got to change playmates and change playgrounds sometimes. So sometimes there are people and places you're going to have to give up. Also, she says you have to learn to say no. Learn to say no. It's about boundaries, right? And focus on the moment. Stay in the present. Maybe I don't have to give up sugar forever, but you know what? And just for today, I'm going to stay away from sugar. You know, your life is important. Your time is important. Focus on what you're doing right now. She says, here are some questions. Is this what I want to put my time and energy into right now? Is this unhealthy relationship worth putting time and energy into? Or is this group of friends that are being more healthy the kind of people that I want to spend my time with? Am I mismanaging my precious gift of my life because I want to eat crap, or because I want to stay in this unhealthy relationship because I'm afraid to be alone? Or am I investing my time in the people and things that matter the most to me? Meaningful matters, right? Talk about meaningful matters all the time. Healing is a present time challenge, she says. Focus on the present. Okay, she says, have realistic goals. You know that. If you have unrealistic goals, you've heard this stuff over and over. And the things you hear in this book, from your support groups, from your life coach, from your bariatric coach, from your exercise person, from your dietitian, from your surgeon. Are your goals realistic? I think that's something to pay attention to. If you're here, 10 people tell you you have a tail, you better take a look. She says you have to develop your willpower. You have to develop willpower. Discipline is necessary for making time to exercise. Discipline is necessary for taking time to meal prep. Discipline is necessary for making sure you take your vitamins. Discipline is necessary for making sure you eat protein first. Discipline is necessary to make sure you have a protein drink or a protein bar with you at all times. The most important thing, says Carolyn Meese, is to do your practices regularly and with discipline. She says, build up the courage to act by inspiring yourself with stories and wisdom of those who have changed their lives forever through taking action. This means have a sponsor. Get involved with people who are 15 years out from bariatric surgery and are maintaining their weight. You've heard all of these things before. Here's another one you've heard before. Learn something new every day. Podcasts. Reading this book. For me this weekend, I was like, oh my gosh, some of it was not new, but some of it was a new way of looking at things. Are you learning something new every day? Because learning activates passion, and passion, she says, is power. One of the strongest forms of energy, she says, is through passion. Get excited about your new lifestyle. Get excited about the things you're doing. Get excited about the new positive people you're hanging out with. She says, create a new vocabulary for yourself. Get rid of the wounds, you know, the words associated with woundedness, like I'm a victim and, oh, I'm damaged and, oh, I'm just constantly in pain. Find words like I have hope. I have passion. I have enthusiasm. Ooh, powerful change. And I love this one. All right, I'm going to read this and we're almost finished. Try writing about your life as a journey. She says, write a story entitled, My Biography Becomes My Biology. Ooh, I love this. She says, write about good things from your life. Write about loving relationships. Write about fun memories. You know, write about, she told the story about a guy who wrote a story. His story was called Entering the Well, and it had a double meaning, right? He talked about going to the well, you know, how some people go to the well to get water, enriching things from their lives. But it was also going to the well, finding wellness by doing these positive things. I loved that. So find words that distance you from your illness and fill you with power, right? I refuse to spend time negatively thinking. I joyfully forgive that person. I let go of hurts and wounds. I choose health. Great words. And review daily. Review daily where you have plugged in your circuits, are her words. Make it a daily practice to note where you have invested your energy. Did you focus on things that were negative for you? Did you invest your energy in negative conflict with people? Or did you invest your energy in learning something new or doing something that you enjoyed? Or talking about positive things with somebody else? Or sharing your progress today? I have a sheet called the Daily Sheet, and it talks about empowering yourself, looking at what you want to change and looking at what you did well, focusing on what you did well. All right. She says, as a preemptive action, direct your energy circuits each day into positive sources that can help you feel filled with power and light, goodness, positive things. So you have energy to heal. Two more things. She says, practice gratitude, especially anytime you feel overwhelmed, like, oh, this isn't working. Am I ever going to heal? And am I ever going to get to the point where I don't give into emotional eating? What am I grateful for today? I ate my protein first every time I ate. I'm grateful for the encouragement that my personal trainer gave me. I'm grateful that I called and made an appointment with my bariatric coach. Be grateful. Every effort you make, says Carolyn Meese, regardless of how insignificant it may seem to you, will always bring you closer to a state of spiritual and physical health. I'm going to read that again. And that's why they say baby steps. We're looking for progress, not perfection. Walk up one step. Don't try to leap four at a time. Every effort you make, every extra ounce of water, every time you take your bariatric vitamins, every time you report on a non-scale victory, every time you choose not to argue with your spouse, every time you choose to talk about how you're feeling instead of emotionally eat, every effort you make, regardless how insignificant it might seem to you, will always bring you closer to a state of spiritual and physical health. And that's what we're going for. That's what we're going for. Amazing book. Please read this book. Again, it's called Why People Don't Heal and How They Can by Carolyn Meese, M-Y-S-S. So, refrain from getting stuck in your woundedness. Forgive. Remember that you trespass also. Forgive yourself and forgive others. Focus on what you're doing well. Look for the small victories. Keep your mind positive. Put forth the effort and realize that change is necessary for change to occur. Get the help you need and thank yourself for putting forth effort every single day. This episode and the last episode are so important, not just in your journey through the process of healing and recovering from the disease of obesity, but for anybody who's struggling with anything. I would share this episode with anybody who you love in your life, because this is not just about the disease of obesity, but it absolutely pertains to the disease of obesity and your healing. And remember, my friends, every time that we meet, we're talking about your health, which is absolutely your responsibility this day and every day. Take care, take responsibility, and I'll see you next time. Thank you so, so much for spending your time with me and on your own healing journey.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of Berry Aftercare, the podcast. The information shared on this podcast is considered psychoeducation and does not constitute therapy or a therapeutic relationship. Be sure to check out all the great information I provide, much of it free, by visiting my website at www.ConnieStapletonPhD.com. Be sure to leave your positive comments for this podcast and listen in next week to learn more ways to live your best post-op life.